You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris, and it's Dave. You know, Dave, today I'm wearing my Packers Therapy t-shirt. I mean, maybe you have yours on, too. The one we got from Dr. Klaus and Knut.
I have it today. Oh, that's very nice. I don't have it on right now, but I just got done watching a show, and I actually ran on the treadmill before that, so I don't want to get that sweaty, which I don't know if I can call my workouts sweaty-worthy, but... it has a special place on the shelf.
Well, after the game that we saw, I felt I had to do something to raise my spirits. So I got on my Packers Therapy t-shirt. It was actually the first edition. I put on my Packers shorts, you know, the actual the mesh ones, you know, that you buy in the pro shop, because I needed to get in the right frame of mind after what was one of the more disappointing losses. 20-13, Packers get beaten by the Vikings. After 4 years in a row winning the division, Packers lose the division. They wound up finishing 10-6, just as I predicted, by the way. And now they're going to wind up having to go on the road in the playoffs. They'll play at Washington at 3:40 Lambeau Field time on Sunday. So, Dave, this is where I want to start with the podcast here. The defense holds Minnesota to 13 points, only 49 plays. They were 2 of 11 on third down. The defense forced at least one turnover. I guess special teams also forced one. 3 sacks. They limited Adrian Peterson to 67 yards. Teddy Bridgewater to 91 yards passing. Now, that's strong enough to win. But at the same time, the Packer offense... this is all you need to say about the 2016 Packer or 2015 Packer offense. Yards per play, they fell from first in 2014 to 29th in the league in 2015. Third down conversions were third in 2014, down to 28th. And I think we saw this play out brilliantly on Sunday Night Football. The Packer defense certainly played well enough to win. The offense just cannot get out of its way. I mean, this is an offense that I can't imagine them winning even one more game, let alone going deep in the playoffs. What's your take on that?
My take is really unknown or unexplained. I can't explain what I'm watching because it looks like the same guys out there for the most part. Offensive line is certainly dinged up, and that can create a lot of problems. But the quarterback is the same. The running backs are the same. Some of the wide receivers are the same. And it almost looks to me like they're trying to fail. And I'm watching, the thing that really jumped out at me when I watched the offense is when they would isolate again on the wide receivers, I thought there were two things I noticed. One is that there were times when they would kind of run down the field. First, you know, they run down with their heads down at least 5 to 10 yards. And then they make their break. And rarely are they, you know, trying to move quickly. So right away, right there, I think that's a problem because Rodgers is not getting enough time for plays to develop. But so first what I noticed is they got their heads down there as they're running. And then a couple of times I saw them run toward a defender. And other times I saw them as they're going through the route that the defender almost mirrored their moves as they're making their breaks, almost as if they knew exactly what their routes are going to be or what their tendencies are, almost like a school of fish where that move together in the ocean. I thought there were a few times where it's like they're breaking toward the left or right at the exact same time. So there is no confusion on the defense. There's no guessing. It seems like they're always a step ahead or, you know, right alongside the receivers. And I don't understand what that is, because what I was trying to figure out is, I know I could list probably five things wrong with the offense this year. The injuries, particularly Jordy Nelson, the running game is a problem. They don't have a lot of talent wide receiver. You know, that goes on and on. But I'm trying to figure out what happened first, because I think something cracked first and then a bunch of dominoes fell after that. And I really – is it the fact that they really didn't have the talent? Once Jordy went down, they overevaluated their talent. And when that happened, they started to lose, and Rodgers lost confidence. The line started pressing. They got hurt. You know, like, is there a first that happened that caused this whole thing to fall apart?
That's a great great question. You know, when did the wheels come off? And I would almost suggest, you know, the attitude people have. You remember after the Pittsburgh game in the preseason, and Jordy gets hurt, and it was as if there was a funeral.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering if that wasn't the first crack. The first crack maybe was mental.
It might have been, because you know what's really interesting about that too is when he got hurt, I felt it too. Before I even listened to another podcast or listened to or read any articles, I felt as if, oh no, I think the season just ended, but I can't put my finger on exactly why. And I wonder if my subconscious or somehow I remember that when Jordy doesn't play, because he's been hurt in the past,
mm-hmm,
right?
Sure.
I mean, they said he missed a few games last year. Did they seriously struggle on offense? And I just sort of in the back of my mind remembered that. And then when I see him get hurt and out for the season, somehow it like brought all that up in my memory to think, oh no, that's bad, but that's like really bad.
Well,
that's not Lacey getting hurt or Sitton getting hurt. I mean, this is a difference maker.
I got to tell you, Dave, I felt the same way, that sense of doom. I thought it was just me because I tend to overreact that way, but you mentioned it. And when you read the quotes in the media from the Packers, I mean, they felt it too, which I thought was odd because usually it's just me kind of, you know, getting too emotionally involved in this whole thing. But when they began, I think Rodgers in particular, began, oh my God, you know, we're without Jordy. It's one thing to be without a guy for a few games as they have been in the past, but when you lose him permanently, even before the season begins, you know, I think that's when teams begin to adjust. And the Packers came out then, right, 6-0, but you could see that the first few games they compensated really well, and then teams kind of figured it out. And as teams began to figure out the Jordy Nelson-less Packers, they had no way to adjust back because Jordy Nelson wasn't going to walk onto that field again the rest of the season. And the last, say, 10 games or so, when they've been 4-6 in these last 10 games, they really haven't had an answer. And it's almost as if that whole pecking order changed, where all of a sudden now you no longer had the mismatches on the other team's defensive backs because everyone kind of moved up in the line a little bit. And you no longer had, you know, Randall Cobb matched up against the number two guy. You know, the number one guy was on Randall Cobb all of a sudden. And, you know, James Jones could probably beat a lot of number three or certainly number four defensive backs. But, you know, when he's getting the number two defensive back, I don't think he's quite as good. I also don't think, you know, Adams didn't improve the way they hoped, but he, you know, was hurt. That probably set him back. You add in the offensive line injuries, and it was kind of that death by a thousand cuts. It was started out with the Jordy Nelson thing, but then there was all the additional things. Then Rodgers begins to accumulate sacks, and I think he had over 40 sacks this season. And, you know, yeah, you get a little happy feet. I think that does happen. When you lose faith in your, you know, offensive line, you begin leaving the pocket quicker. You're not looking downfield because you're looking where the next big hit is coming from. You know, guy's 32 years old. He's also the accumulation of a lot of years of hits. I think all of that adds up. And the next thing you know, you're struggling to move the football at all.
Yeah, I'm really interested that people are starting to really blame Rodgers here at the end. But it's true he's not playing his typical self, or you could say he's just not playing well. But, man, the guy is all alone out there. He's got an offensive line he can't trust. He's got receivers clearly he doesn't trust or are not getting open. And then he's had running back issues all year. I mean, so he is like a broken man. And, man, can you see it in his eyes? I mean, whether it was at the very end of the game when they – you know, the game's over after the Hail Mary that they had. The look in his eye.
Vacant.
I mean, it looks as if he doesn't want to play football anymore.
Yeah, it's a 1,000-yard stare, yeah.
It is. And, you know, if he's going into games just thinking, I just pray I don't get hurt and just get this season over with, you're not gonna play well. I mean, at least he's just going to play at his level where he's doing the belt and, you know, you have that sort of eye of the tiger mentality. He doesn't have that at all. And I think you're right. It's 1,000 cuts. But I think every level needs to take part of the blame. I think when Nelson got hurt, I think Ted, well, one, he focused on the defense for a number of years,
right.
Which
and that
I think,
paid
you know,
off. Yeah.
There seems to be, I mean, he did do well in the top two draft picks. I think they're playing well.
Yep.
I think they have a good future. And I think the defense is good enough.
Good enough. Yeah.
And improved. But but that's the thing. When you focus on, say, one side of the ball or the other, and you only have the draft to do it, well, you're going to leave other things exposed when you don't sort of use other avenues. Or I think like what I heard on the radio, you know, if you're going to only draft to develop, you got to make sure you draft really well, because if you miss – a couple of years, you've got nothing left to fall back on. So I think Ted takes some responsibility. He could have gone out and got a veteran tight end that would be better than what we have. And he could have addressed the wide receiver more, because if they're not going to use Abadaris or Janice, then they're limited to three wide receivers. And all the plays that they have where they have four, maybe five receivers, that was completely taken out because they don't trust those guys. Well, if you got another guy in there to replace more than just Jones, he could have done something there. I think McCarthy is not – I mean, you could tell he's searching, and it looked like what his solution for this game was, I'm going to put Sitton at left tackle, and I know he's not going to be a good left tackle. It doesn't matter, because we're going to run the ball, and we're going to run it a lot.
Right.
And we're going to put our best run blockers out there, and we're just going to run and run. I don't care. We're going to run and run and run. And somewhere in the second quarter, I think they realize, look, they have – 9-10 guys in the box.
Yeah,
there is,
yeah.
You can't do that. So we gotta bail from that. But McCarthy, I think, is struggling to figure out how to use what talent he has and make them successful. And then, you know, it's injuries. I think Rodgers is the kind of guy that will be quick to blame other people.
Mm.
So I think as things go wrong, I think he can be one to throw it away, take a sack, and sort of just get frustrated and have sort of a poor attitude rather than, you know, like I've never seen him on the sidelines yelling at his offensive line to, like, get it together, right? That's Tom Brady does that. Phillip Rivers does that. You know, they're yelling on the sidelines to get their guys going. I don't know if I've ever seen him. I see him on the sidelines joking around when things are going well. But you notice how he's always seems to be on an island when things are going bad on the sidelines?
Yeah. I don't know how to really – interpret that sideline stuff. You know, I mean, everyone's a little bit different that way. I did notice this time on the field that he didn't seem to be as demonstrative, but I don't know if that's because he decided to stay within the lines or if it was just the guy was kind of depressed, you know?
Gave up,
you
yeah.
know, it was, I mean, I heard him being kind of applauded in some circles. Well, you know, he didn't act like a dick out there this week. And I thought, yeah, he didn't, but is that because he had just kind of become discouraged? And, you know, I mean, that's not any great shakes either. I guess given the choice, maybe it's better that way than for him to constantly be making hand gestures and eye rolls and stuff like that, which is
yeah,
a bad
yeah.
look, you know. But I had an interesting Twitter conversation with our friend Mike from Ashwaubenon today on doing private messaging, you know, as we sometimes do. Hell, as we all the time do. And he asked if he thought maybe this was the beginning of the end for this version of the Packers. And, you know, I thought it was a really interesting question because I have kind of eschewed that thinking in the past. But I thought about the general situation that they're in. And let me tell you what I think, and then, you know, you give me your take on it. You know, by my reckoning, okay, Rodgers, I think, has started the inevitable decline. Let's face it, you know, Father Time remains unbeaten and untied. You know, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is 32, and he's not getting any younger. Now, at 10 years in, Mike McCarthy is kind of ancient when it comes to tenures of football coaches. I mean, you have Bill Belichick, I guess, who's got a longer tenure. But generally, 10 years is a long time. Vince Lombardi wasn't 10 years in Green Bay. So, you know, McCarthy's schemes maybe, just maybe, are a little bit stale, and they're well understood around the league because I think in lots of ways things he did were leading edge, and people adopt it and figure it out. And I'm wondering that after 10 years, if maybe that isn't the case here. And I also think that the scheming that the Packers do is so dependent on Aaron Rodgers being superhuman. And I just don't think that's sustainable. You know, I think they need to design an offense that is not predicated on having an otherworldly quarterback, having wide receivers that can win their one-on-one battles and get open on their own, and have an offense that can keep that otherworldly superhuman quarterback clean. I mean, they just can't rely on 12 making the absolute right decision every single time, threading the needle precisely, and then skipping away from rushers routinely when they get through. And I think in his prime, you know, kind of ages, you know, 26 through 31, when they won a Super Bowl and he won two MVPs, I think they were so heavily reliant on him being great. And when he saw the guy that was open, and when he saw that guy, the throws were routinely, you know, precise. And when he didn't see him, he was able to scramble away. He was a little bit younger. He hadn't had the calf injury. He was just a little bit younger. So I'm not saying that the guy has gotten old and he's no longer good. I mean, he's very, very good.
Yeah.
Maybe last year, if you look at last year as an index of 100, okay, MVP season, he's probably 94 now. I mean, the guy finished the season with a 92.7 quarterback rating, but that was the lowest in his career. And I just think it's a little bit of an edge that's off in a system that seems to require the quarterback to be outstanding, the line to keep him clean, and the wide receivers to win their battles. That's a lot you have to rely on to make it go. And I really think that this is the beginning of the end unless they come up with a way where they don't rely on such precision from the quarterback, that there's margin for errors, that the wide receivers don't have to win their battles, but rather there's ways that you can scheme them open. I think you have to kind of rethink the way they play offense.
I think you're right on a few things. Implying that his physical skills are diminished, I think by definition, every year you get older after a certain point, unless you, say, increase your training in the off season, there's going to be some decline, but I think he's still at such a high level that I think we shouldn't be able to notice it. I think his decline is all mental in my mind. I think he's given up. I think he's running around scared as opposed to running around with confidence. And, I mean, just that interception he threw in the end zone. I think he threw that just a half second too quickly just to get rid of it and ended up, you know, having it float to the right as opposed to the left. I remember that one throw he threw to Jordy Nelson against Atlanta to put into overtime.
Mm-hmm.
How he just absolutely leaned into it and fired that thing into the corner of the end zone.
Amazing.
Here, he's just running and he flicked it up. And I think that is a mental issue and not a physical. I think if he were on, I think he's got the physical tools to zing it into the corner of the end zone like as always. So I don't think that the change for the Packers next year – I think it's very possible that given a new personnel and maybe a new approach to things, that he doesn't look as good as he used to. I think that's still possible. But yeah, maybe a little bit slower, may hit the ankle from a year ago, you know, always be a little bit of a factor. I mean, but he's been sacked. I guess he took 8 sacks last week. They had 9 in total, but
yeah,
5
this week, you know, and he was also, I saw this amazing stat and I think this feeds into what you're saying. He attempted in this game a season high 19 passes while under duress, and that's according to ESPN. He was 8 of 19 with an interception, when he was under pressure. Now, he was under pressure 49% of his dropbacks. That's the fourth highest percentage of the season, okay, in this last game. And all season long, 33% of the time, he was under pressure. It's the fifth highest among any of the qualified quarterbacks. I mean, I think part of the reason why he maybe is a little shell-shocked is because he's been under pressure like never before.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, imagine playing quarterback and you've got four or five options, you're reading the defense, and knowing to my right is a rusher that's going to get to me in two or three seconds. It's going to be quick because whether it was Sitton or Barkley or whoever it was, I guess to your right would have been Bulaga. So right. To your left, his left, they're coming. Yeah. So, I mean, you're trying to make decisions knowing that the clock going in your head is really quick. And I think as the more you get hit, he's gotten blindsided a few times.
I think that ends up mentally,
seriously, I mean, physically too, but mentally I think he is – I think either he's scared. I mean, look at Rocky III. Rocky, he couldn't fight when he was scared. I think there's a scared factor. I think there's a fear of getting hurt. And the idea that you don't trust, and then I think you just lose your desire. You just want to get out of there and not get hurt. I think to put that all into, like, the physical category that he doesn't have the skills they used to, I think that's – I'm not there with him yet. I think with a better line, more – confidence, guys getting open, that he can still be Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years.
You know, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I do think, though, that this lack of precision on some of these passes, yes, that could be confidence, or a lack of confidence. But I'm also just wondering if you just a little, you know, the first indications that, you know, you're no longer the kid that you once were. I mean, it's like me playing Jeopardy, right? You know, I know the answer, but I can't buzz in fast enough, you know. When I was 30, I could run the board, you know, but now I can't get it out of my mouth fast enough, you know. So
yeah.
This may be some of what they're seeing. Now, Rodgers has every reason in the world. I mean, we talked about those under duress stats. But, you know, let's face it. When you have your left guard playing left tackle – and, you know, you've taken a lot of blindside hits, including the one that was the game turner, really, in this game. You know, he's going back to pass, and his hand, you know, gets hit before he can get rid of the ball. It winds up being a fumble, yeah. And those were the difference in the game. I mean, that defensive touchdown by Minnesota was the difference. And how can that not get in a guy's head? He's taken so many of those, and he already knows that he doesn't have his normal left tackle. And even if he does have his left tackle this week against Washington, he knows that guy's missed a couple weeks with a bad ankle. So how good is he going to be anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
And let's face it, too. I mean, even when he's healthy, Bakhtiari has given up a lot of sacks. He's better than anything else they have, but he's not that great to begin with.
Yeah, and it was a mistake to keep Sitton in there. Once they went in the fourth quarter and they went to more of a playground approach at the passing, I think when Sitton was in there and they were going to commit to the run, that I understood. But once they had to go to the pass, they should have tried put Sitton back at guard and put I guess they had Treader would have been an option. I would have liked to have seen him. Because, I mean, literally Sitton can't backpedal. He is a huge man. But not the tall left tackle type.
No.
He is a guard type.
He's a mauler.
He's a mauler. He can't move his feet. Why they would do that when they were going to sort of all passing at the end, I think they should have made that switch. But unless, you know, Treader at left tackle during the week, they realize, boy, he's really bad. This is the only option we have. That's the one hard thing to gauge. But, you know, the other thing, Chris, so the offensive line could – you know, create all kinds of problems that they might have been able to solve otherwise. But there are a couple of things I think I don't understand why they're not seeing. I think the hurry-up offense that they're doing when things are clicking is a big mistake right now. With guys hurt, young guys, I feel like there is a number of plays where you have guys lining up in line of scrimmage, you have wide receivers out wide, and they look toward this huddle and they put their arms out that they don't know what the play is. I saw John Kuhn do it one time when he was out wide. I thought I saw it one other time, and I know I've seen other times during the year. When they're having so much trouble, why they don't just huddle up under center, make sure everyone is on the same page. Rather, but I think what they do is I think they're telling them, look, like you've told me, they may not call specific plays to Devontae Adams. They look at the defense and say, okay, when you see that, you run and then you cut based on your guy. I think that's a huge mistake. I don't think that type of offense is working right now. I think they need to coordinate patterns together because you have guys playing so man-to-man. Why they wouldn't be running and one deep safety, isn't that the defense that they're always playing against? Why they wouldn't run sort of pick plays every single play on that to get guys open? Because if you're going to be that tight, then those pick plays are going to be successful. Or one step right, cut left, and then bang, you hit them because you know you can sort of out-juke the guy, which Cobb should be good at. But they're not running any of those plays. I think they're making – you've got your plays sort of scripted, and you know what you're supposed to do, and all of them are downfield, and they're not changing from that. I don't understand that at all.
You know, something else that is really frustrating to me, and I mentioned this, my son and I, of course, watch the games together, and it seems like, you know, as much as they struggle and this is bad, and they finally, you know, find an open receiver downfield, and it seems like – every game, you know, when they have a chance to kind of, you know, get some traction going, that receiver drops the ball. And now, normally, I mean, there's going to be drops. And Randall Cobb has had 10 of them this year, and Adams has had 10 of them this year. That's a pretty high number for drops. But it usually doesn't matter that much because, you know, you're going to make it up and then a play or two, or they're going to make a great play downfield. The problem is they haven't had that other side of it, not very often at least, where – now a drop ball seems to have more gravity than it normally would because their margin for error is so much smaller. It has been so much smaller this season so that normally what would have been just a disappointing drop becomes a totally frustrating drop because they just aren't getting those kind of opportunities. And if they could cut down on those, and pretty much everyone on the team has been guilty, but especially Cobb and Adams, if those guys – you know, could have maybe cut those in half. And, you know, you get more momentum, you get things going, you convert a first down, maybe instead of punting, you kick a field goal. I mean, just these sorts of things, or if nothing else, you keep the ball a little bit longer and keep the defense off the field for a while. They just haven't had that going. So mistakes have just been magnified this year because the margin for error has been so small.
That's true, although I give benefit of the doubt to some of these guys. I'm going to use a baseball analogy for this, but you know, when you used to play baseball, and all the listeners don't understand baseball, but say when I would play shortstop, and there was a pitcher that would walk, like can't throw strikes, mm-hmm. he's walking, mm-hmm. you know, two consecutive guys, all of a sudden there's a ground ball to me, and it goes right through my legs. Now the coach is like furious with me because I made an error, and I think, well, I've been sitting out there, and this guy's not throwing strikes, I'm on my heels, you know, I'm not in the flow of the game because I'm just sort of waiting around out there. All of a sudden there's a play to me and I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like in the Cobb case, his first drop that would have been a first down, that it was, you know, he hadn't got a lot, any throws to him. All of a sudden, bang, it's right on him. And, you know, he doesn't make the play. And so now you're mad at Cobb as well. But I think, you know, the issue isn't Cobb dropping the ball. The issue is all these other things. And guys just are not mentally in it. And I feel like sometimes when these errors are happening, I'm not blaming the drop. I'm blaming sort of the overarching problems that they have, which is personnel scheme and some of those
things.
Well,
you know, it's one thing to, you know, blame young Davey Erickson over at shortstop. But, you know, young Davey Erickson I don't think was making $10 million a season like Randall Cobb is making. And so I have a harder time – you know, kind of reconciling, yeah, you haven't got any passes, so it's okay if you drop, you know, that pass, or you drop 10 balls during a year because of the offense being out of sync. I think when you are at the professional level, I think there's a different standard. And even when I watch the college games as opposed to the pro games, you know, you make a little bit of allowance. These guys, you know, are college players, and so – you know, they can't high point the ball necessarily, or they're not able to make the diving catch all the time. But I think the expectations in the pros is different, especially when you're, you know, being paid like a number one receiver. You've got to perform. And so I'm not going to be able to give a guy a pass on that. As much as I like Randall Cobb and I'm glad they signed him for the money they did, you know, I got a higher standard for that, just like I do, you know, for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's being paid $20 million a year for a reason. He's a two-time MVP, MVP in the Super Bowl. You know, you have to have a higher level of performance. I'm going to have a higher standard for him than I'm going to have for, you know, the Badgers quarterback Stave, who was a walk-on and, you know, wound up, you know, by default being their quarterback for 4 years, basically, at Wisconsin. That's a different kind of deal than Aaron Rodgers, a first-round draft choice, with was the highest-paid guy in the league. I think those guys have to perform, and I have a hard time giving those guys a pass.
Well, that's fair, certainly compare them to me. But I think I'm talking about human nature is, you know, these guys are the top of the sport, you know, the highest of professionals,
exactly.
The best in the world at what they
exactly.
do. Yet
you
they still
that, though, you know?
They still make drops, they make bad decisions. You can see guys choke out there. I mean, they're not so good that they become robots. I just think this is what's happening, is that the whole system, the thing is broken as a whole. And so when individual parts aren't working, it's like more things just start breaking because it's a symptom of the whole entire process. And I think it comes down to, you're right, when Jordy got hurt, it exposed them at their talent level, and the coaching was not able to sort of readjust to the talent that they have. They just relied on what they've been doing in the past, and it took them so long to make any type of changes. I mean, because now you're seeing them try to make all kinds of things, but it's too late. They've lost the team. I think the confidence on anyone on offense is shot, and now you've got a bunch of guys hurt. So now you're really behind the eight ball. What we need to do, Chris, is just get this season over with and hit the restart button. Because I think next year, I think Jason Wilde said something to effect. He thought his bold prediction for 2016 is McCarthy could win Coach of the Year.
And Rodgers MVP.
Yeah, I think that's – or maybe Comeback Player of the Year at the same time. I think that's possible because they get
– I think he got into Mason Crosby stash.
Well, I think the Packers could come out next year with Jordy Nelson healthy. Let's say they add another guy on offense that is a dynamic player. So now you could upgrade this wide receiver by a long shot. I think you could really improve it. And if Rodgers is still Rodgers, that the offensive line can stay relatively healthy. And then when you're winning, it's amazing how it seems like you don't get as injured as when you're losing. I could see this offense being really good next year, but there's a lot of ifs in there. I think Jordy coming back is normal.
Yeah, but Jordy's going to be 31 coming off a serious knee injury. You know.
That's right. That's not a given.
Yeah, and it's there's a lot of moving parts here. It will depend what kind of coaching changes will they make. Will they sign a free agent or two? You know, they have done it from time to time. They surprise you. Who will they pick up in the draft? I mean, you know, it's. I'm hoping that they're going to focus on the offensive line. You know, maybe that becomes a strength again for them. You know, are certain guys not going to be re-signed? But they let Julius Peppers go. Is Brian Bulaga going to hang it up? I mean, there's different questions. It's hard for me at this point to really imagine this team returning to what it was even last year, because I just have this sense as though the version, I don't know what version of the Packers, you know, this is. Is it version 3, you know? I kind of think that it's time for a remake, maybe for the last 4 or 5 years of Rodgers' career, kind of, you know, hit the reset button and do some kind of, I don't want to say dramatic, but something notable, you know, not just tweaks, but I think they have to do something a little bit more dramatic than that. You're not going to fire everybody, and you're not going to all of a sudden, you know, become a weird kind of gadget play offense. You're not going to do that. But I think you're going to have to do things that are substantively different. If for no other reason, I think in terms of the players having confidence again and believing in what you're trying to do, this is going to leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. And I think there's a mental aspect to this as well. So if you do make some changes – you know, Tom Clemens leaves and you bring back Philbin, or, you know, things like that, that give people confidence, or at least they are willing to suspend their disbelief.
Yeah, I really would love to be a fly on the wall in Green Bay and hear the meetings, because I wonder if they're saying to each other, I need a wide receiver that can get open. You know, do they say that to themselves, or do they say, gosh, you know, if we could just execute a little bit better, you know, we could have it. So how do they feel about the team? You know, are they – because I've coached teams where I know my players are no good, and I think if I only had good players, I could do better. And then they can march upstairs to 10 and say, you need to go out and improve this team. Or do they feel like we're just this close? You know, can we just execute? Can we just get guys healthy? You know, we'll be fine. Because if it is a McCarthy saying, I need players, I need talent, I need you to restock me on offense, then I think you're going to see some changes on offense. But I think there's a chance, Chris, that the team we see next year is this team plus a few free agents. I'm sorry, plus a few draft picks. And it's basically the same offense. Mm. I think that's a huge mistake. I think they could go out and draft a tight end and sort of make a competition, but, you know, are you going to like Richard Rodgers or some rookie that comes in at tight end? It's probably not going to be a meaningful upgrade if they do that. Could they add another wide receiver in the fifth round to sort of be in the mix with Ty Montgomery and Janice and everything? That's a possibility. I think that's a mistake. I think you get Jordy back, you go out and you get somebody that's a veteran guy that you know is going to improve this team, and shift everyone down. You got Jordy 1, you got Cobb 2, Jones is say you're 4 or 5, or he's gone, and get another third in there so you don't have to rely on Davante Adams. Because I think Davante could come back in preseason and look good again and then flop in the regular season. I don't think you can trust that guy. So I think the changes, we just don't know what changes are going to be, because it's really hard to gauge what are they saying on the inside. You know, what do they think the problem is?
That's what's hard to gauge. I mean, they're pretty much a stay the course kind of group. I mean, I think Ted's that way. I think McCarthy's that way. He's shown some remarkable humility in giving up play calling and that sort of stuff. But I think he believes in his schemes. He believes in his systems. And it's worked in the past for him. But the reason I don't think they can continue that way is because I just don't think that their receivers and their quarterback and their offensive line are what they were when it was all working so well. That was generally a younger, healthier group than what they have now. I think they need to really look at what can we do with a group that's a little bit older and a league that is a little more caught on to what we're doing. How can we stay ourselves but mix it up enough where we create more opportunities for our guys and we don't put all the burden at one place? In other words, that you have more places where you're spreading that responsibility, and if Aaron Rodgers isn't brilliant, you know, you can still win.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. It's 10 weeks ago, we thought this offense was pretty darn good. I mean, that wasn't last year, which they were very good. It was this season.
Yeah.
It was 10 weeks ago.
It's hard to believe.
Someone could, I think, and I'd read it, but maybe no one else, but I could write a book about the collapse of this offense. What, you know, or someone do a Netflix documentary on this offense. Like, what in the world happened? Was it, did the defense switch to a defense that all of a sudden made the offense null and void? Or was the Ty Montgomery was just like, just that little bit was enough to send the talent on the wide receiver down? I sure hope they don't go into next year with 5 wide receivers, 2 of which they don't trust.
Mm.
Right, I mean that can't happen anymore. If they're on the team, then they've got to be able to rely on them. They got to produce, and they have to be able to play.
I think they'll probably carry 6 though, just because Janice has proven to be really good on special teams. So they might carry him as a 6th wide receiver because they want him to be their special teams guy.
Well, he should be the special teams guy then. But if Abadaris isn't gonna, Abadaris should be playing yesterday, if based on how these other wide receivers are playing, and if he can't get on the field, he should not be on the team.
Ever since he dropped that ball a week ago, it would have been a first down against Arizona. It seemed like his start descended at that moment. It's almost like when a running back fumbles, you know, there was a fumble by Starks first play, second half last week. He was done the rest of the game. I'm just wondering if that applies to the wide receivers too. You drop the ball like that, and okay, you're done until we need you again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fascinating on the one hand to watch this happen, but on the other hand, it is boring football to watch when your team is not good on offense. Not being good on defense is infuriating, but it's fascinating to watch, right? Like, they've been bad on defense.
Like 2011.
Yeah, I mean, there are no more entertaining games than that Arizona game where it's back and forth, back and forth. When your team can't move the ball, I mean, yesterday I was playing my computer, I was reading in the second half. And I think there are a lot of tweets and emails I got that reflect the same thing, is that this team is boring. And if it's boring, then I kind of ready to have the season be done, hit the reset button, and start again next year, which probably means I'm pretty spoiled.
Well, let me ask you this question, okay? The Packers are a playoff team, again, 7 years in a row. But based on the 12 teams that made the postseason this year, do you think that the Packers are the worst of the 12 playoff teams?
Can I answer after the break?
And in fact, even after the break, I'll read you the names of the teams that are in the postseason, and then you can.
I might need to. Yeah. I think I can pull them together. But yeah, let's do a break.
Let's take a break.
Minutes.
Yes. For those of us who are recovering from surgery, we need to take a little medicine too along the way, so that will allow me to get through this podcast. Not that talking to you is painful, Dave, but you know.
Yeah,
anyway, we're picking over the charred remains of. And we'll talk about that later on in the podcast, too,
yeah.
Of the Packers' disappointing season-ending loss to the Minnesota Vikings, Packers losing 20-13 to lose the division and wind up having to play on the road in the postseason. We will talk about how the Packers stack up against those other 11 playoff teams with more Packers therapy right after this. Hey, Chris and Dave back with more Packers therapy. Dave, we were talking about the postseason and the Packers making it again, which is great, 7 years in a row. You like that. But there are 11 other teams in the postseason. In the AFC, Denver, New England, Cincinnati, Houston, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. And in the NFC, Carolina, Arizona, Minnesota, Washington, and Seattle. Are all of those teams, all 11 of those teams, as it stands right now, do you think the Packers are the worst of those other teams?
I do. I do. I think that they are worse than Washington, because I think the two eligible candidates are Washington and maybe Houston. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about Houston, but I think they are a team that struggle a lot of the year. They beat Kansas City this year, and they beat them pretty soundly. I really enjoyed watching that game. I was in New York when I watched
that.
That might
have been the last game that Kansas City lost, or maybe they lost only one more game. I mean, KC got red hot.
Yeah,
they finished actually better than the Packers, 11-5.
But that can show it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Exactly.
You know, and Kansas City has gone the opposite direction. So possibly Houston's. I don't know them well enough.
9-7. Again, they got hot. They started out bad. They got hot. Even Washington's won the last four games, albeit against non-playoff teams, but they won the last four games in a row.
Yeah. I think that the Packers, with their line, if they go in with a left tackle that is a 80% Bakhtiari or less, I think they're the worst team in the playoffs. I think that their offense will continue to struggle. I think they're a team that's lucky to score 13 points against anybody. And their defense, although I think is improving, getting better, I think that's another attitude. A problem is that if you keep getting back on the field and your offense keeps playing poorly, your defense is eventually going to let down. And I don't think that they're talented enough to really beat anybody. So I expect them fully to lose in Washington. I think people are going to be surprised by when they lose, and it's going to hopefully create some more need to make some changes around Green Bay. But I'm not one of these to think that they can pull it out against Washington. I haven't seen Washington play that much, but I've seen Green Bay play, and I've seen them lose to Chicago, Detroit, Minnesota now, and I thought Bridgewater looked awful in the cold.
Oh, he was terrible. Yeah.
And they still
45.7 passer rating. Terrible.
He looked bad. Yeah. And And they, I thought they committed to stopping the run, and so he should have been able to beat them. I can't imagine that the Washington quarterback, what is it, Cousins?
Kirk Cousins from Michigan State, I think, right?
Yep, that is if that he could play any worse than Bridgewater. And Minnesota led most of the game. I think Packers almost made it back, but ultimately I think Minnesota kind of led the whole game. And I don't – because they're another candidate. I don't think Minnesota is very good. So if I had to choose based on what I – how bad I've seen them play, and I've seen other teams play this year, I think Green Bay's defense offense is really, really bad mm-hmm. right now. So I think they're the worst team in the playoffs.
You know, I think I'm going to agree with you on that. I think as the teams stand right now, the candidates, I think, for, you know, potentially not being as good would be Washington and Houston. But those teams have played much better in the second half. The Broncos, I think, have had some difficulties after their hot start when they, you know, handled Green Bay and they wound up changing quarterbacks and, you know, Peyton Manning, you know, having a seat on the bench for a while. But they still got the top seed in the AFC. And even though they haven't played as well down the stretch as they did at the beginning, I still think they're better. Obviously, the Patriots are better. The Bengals have been strong this year. I'm pretty sure that the Kansas City, maybe, I mean, they may have won 10 in a row. I think they've been just terrific.
It's 9 or 10. Yeah.
Pittsburgh, I've seen them play quite a bit on red zone. I haven't sat down to watch, you know, their game start to finish. But, you know, Roethlisberger looks pretty solid to me. I think that's a pretty good team, or at least better than what I see the Packers doing. The Panthers, you know, 15-1, that's really kind of hard to argue with that. They have pretty good defense. They got a quarterback that knows how to win. Even though the Cardinals got just handled by Seattle this past week, I think they might have had a letdown after really handling the Packers. I think they wound up having a letdown. I think that they're clearly better than the Packers. The Vikings have been, I think, a team that's been ascending. They're better. Now, the Redskins and the Packers is a good matchup. I think that after the Packers, the Redskins are the next weakest team. And so I think it'll be a pretty good game this weekend. I think Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. Redskins were 9-7. They're not awful. I think the Packers are going to be definitely challenged. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost, but this is a game I think it's a possibility they can win. Now, it might be academic, because even if they find a way to win, I can't see them beating anybody else that's going to be left in the field. I just don't see that happening. The favorite to me in the NFC is got to be Seattle. They're looking really, really tough right now. Seattle and the Cardinals, I think, are the two teams that look the strongest in the NFC. And in the AFC, I mean, you know, even though the Patriots took a loss in Week 17, you know, you always have to look to them as the team to beat there.
Yeah, it's when you prepare for teams as well as they do and exploit weaknesses as well as they do, you know, they're always going to be pretty tough, and Brady is a pretty good quarterback. But yeah, on the NFC side, the three teams, Carolina, Arizona, and Seattle, their defense, they are matchup nightmares for the Packers. I think that the road to the Super Bowl for the Packers, if some way they can capture some magic on offense, I think actually could play out as favorable as it could mm-hmm. by losing to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Is you play Washington at Washington, who might not be as a good as team, certainly in the rest of the field. You go to Carolina, and I think Carolina is very good based on their record, but we played them, and it wasn't like they ran us out of the gym like Arizona did. And I think Carolina, I think Cam Newton can run the ball very effectively, and I think he's throwing better, but I don't think he's a great, great quarterback. Even if he wins MVP, I don't think he's a guy on 3rd and 10 that can with his arm create great plays.
But I think Dave, because the Packers are a higher seed than Seattle, if they win, won't they get
Seattle at home?
No, I think if the Packers, wouldn't they get like the Cardinals?
Oh, they do get Arizona.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, they'll
right,
get right. Arizona, and I think that's where it ends.
I think so too. So I back that up. I think it's harder for them to beat Arizona than it is Carolina, because I think Carolina is really weighted on defense right. versus their offense, where I think Arizona's very
balanced.
You're right.
Yeah.
their balance. So I think it's Arizona and done. I was hoping they go to Carolina, they can somehow squeak it out, and then home against Seattle.
Which would be incredible, wouldn't it? I mean, it could still end up that way because I could see, you know, Seattle easily beating Carolina.
I could see that too. I guess the only thing that is their hope is if Arizona didn't have a bye and their quarterback got hurt. I think that's the only chance they would have against Arizona. But unfortunately, now they don't play until they play, you know, their first week, which, you know, hopefully will be against Green Bay.
You never know. I mean, you never know.
You don't.
You know, just one of those things we could be, you know, looking back in a couple of weeks saying, boy, we were throwing dirt on the Packers, and oh boy, you know, I mean, things like that do happen. There's just no indication. I mean, when you lose six out of your last 10 games, it's just impossible to be optimistic that this team is going to have a deep run, even assuming they can get by the Redskins. I mean, I just don't see it happening.
Well, and I have this dream that what's happening is that the Packers, and someone sent this to me today, I think it was Brent sent to me today, is there a chance that they could be doing a rope-a-dope for the last end of the season, and that they can see, too, we could do a lot of pick plays and crossing patterns, but we're not going to do that right now. Because the only reason I think that that's even a remote possibility is because when I watch what they're doing on offense, it looks so comically bad that almost looks like they're doing it on purpose. And, I mean, why are receivers running to the safeties rather than away from safeties? I mean, why is it that bad? Could they really be saving a lot for the playoffs and all of a sudden, surprise, you know, they could play a lot better and sneak up on somebody like Arizona?
Well, you know, sometimes you get lucky. I mean, something weird happens, all right? You know, and all of a sudden that kind of, you know, flips that switch and things start going in your way. Maybe they shouldn't, but they just do. And so, yeah. you know, you don't know. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, even though maybe he's not quite what he was even a year ago, he's still Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, it's very hard for me to, you know, be 100% certain that this team is going to embarrass themselves and not going to be able to, you know, win a game or two games in the postseason because, you know, there's still enough there. The defense is playing well enough. You know, maybe they wind up 10-9, you know, and that is good enough to kind of propel them forward. I mean, you just don't know how this is going to play off. Sometimes these teams, too, that, you know, they get a bye and they're not quite as sharp coming out of the bye.
Right.
We've seen that happen to the Packers. You know, we saw it happen to Atlanta when the Packers played them in 2010. So, yeah, you know, you don't want to be 100% certain because weird stuff happens.
Never 100% certain. But, yeah, there could be a tip-off line of scrimmage, it's intercepted, touchdown, Packers up 7-0 right away, and now Arizona is playing from behind, and they clinch. You know, that has happened. It happened to the Packers, and I've seen it happen to other teams. Could it happen to Arizona? That's possible. But I still think what's going to happen is that they're going to get Washington's very best shot at home, and I think Washington ends up beating them. I think there's going to be a lot of people assuming we're going to win Washington and lose in Arizona. I think we're going to lose in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on that. I guess I guess if I was a betting man, I would probably be taking the Washington football team to win. But I'm not like a lead pipe certainty like I was coming into, say, like the Arizona game where I just sort of expected the Packers to lose. I give them a chance in this game, even as bad as they've been playing. Maybe I'm still hanging on to memories of Packers teams past, but I give them a chance in this one. I wouldn't, you know, if I had to put money on it, I'd go Washington, but I still think that the Packers are good enough to beat that team. Now, if they have to play Arizona, then I give them zero chance. But still, for this week, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to watch. You know, I'll be, I guess, hopeful. I'm not looking forward to seeing them get beat 45-0 against Arizona or Carolina, right? I'm not looking forward to seeing that game. So sometimes I have this feeling like I'm going to end up being disappointed. Let it just happen now so I can get on with life.
Yeah.
I have that feeling with the Packers. And I do. I think that's partially that we're spoiled. We're mm-hmm. spoiled that they – we're spoiled that we just assume they'll be back next year. We're spoiled that they have this chance. I mean, I talked to someone who's an Eagles fan today and would love a chance at the playoffs, mm-hmm. love to be in the conversation and to have another week. His season's done and his coach is gone and they don't know if they have a quarterback. The stability, you can say for Ted and McCarthy, the stability is nice to have. We don't have the searching for a new coach out there. You know, at least we can kind of know what the team is going to look like next year.
You know, I think before we leave the Vikings game, there's a couple things I did want to mention. One of them is that Micah Hyde, I thought, had a terrific game. The interception he made. Now, granted, you know, Bridgewater's throwing the ball left-handed. He must have been channeling Brett Favre there. But Hyde made an absolutely tremendous play to reel that thing in from that goofy way he held his arm, was able to hang on to it. And he was also Johnny on the spot when our boy Mason Crosby, you know, makes the tackle and knocks the ball loose from Patterson, from Cordell Patterson on that long kickoff return. So, you know, props to Micah Hyde and also props to our boy Mason Crosby, you know, for sobering up long enough to make a terrific play.
It really was something. I thought that might give them some juice to kind of make it to the end, but even with that, the offense couldn't sort of make it happen at the end. But say he hadn't fumbled, then this game is much bigger, you know, blowout than what it is, which is pretty amazing, given the stats. Like you say, the quarterback rating of Bridgewater, the running yards for Peterson. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks on the stat-wise that the Packers dominated. And if you can imagine, if he doesn't fumble, then it really is a domination by Minnesota.
Yeah.
It was a weird game.
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, if it's one of those deals, you look at Rodgers' line – you know, 20 out of 44, 291, you know, 80.8 passer rating, not the best, but boy, I mean, better than twice as good as Bridgewater's. You know, Vikings with 151 yards on the ground, that's twice as much as the Packers had. But still, when you look at the total offense, you know, Packers with, won the total offense battle. It's just that, you know, defensive touchdowns, they're very hard. You know, when a team gets a defensive touchdown, it's like 80% chance they're going to win, and that certainly held true in the Packers' 20-13 loss. But, you know, water under the bridge. And I think now we just look onto the postseason, and we get to the important stuff like our email, our tweets that we're getting from people, and also the betting lines. Should we get after that?
Okay, betting lines. We had 15 people participate, 14 people participate, including me, and Mike, which pulled it together. And Scott Perk won this week with 7 answers. A lot of people got a lot of these right this week, but Scott was the only one that got 7 right. So let's just review those real quick. The first line was Aaron Rodgers sacks. You said 3.5. The over got it with 5. So it was definitely a bad day for the line. 2, Adrian Peterson rushing yards. We all said under when you said 147. Every single one of us. So that's and it was.
Yeah.
He only rushed
it was healthy. I really thought the way they were going to get beat was by Peterson. But so much for that.
I was surprised. The Green Bay turnover. Turnovers, 2.5. Everyone said the under, it was only 2 was the turnover differential. So is that right? So the Packers, how many turnovers, I suppose. It wasn't differential, it was how many turnovers they have. Mm-hmm. You said 2.5, the under, it was 2. Sorry, I'm not even knowing my own stats here. Number 4, how many times was Starks touched the ball? You said 6.5. He touched it 11 times. And it was, you know, they were going to focus on the run. It looked like Lacy, when they run Lacy over and over and over again, I mean, he looks like he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they're punishing that guy out there sometimes. Number 5, what is the average yards per attempt for Aaron Rodgers? You said 6.1. It was 6.23, if I had seen that correctly. That's a very good line. So the over had that one. Number of times that Aaron Rodgers would be intercepted, you said 1.5. I took the over, but it was only 1, but it was a big one.
Yeah, in the end zone. But, it was one of those deals where they were on the same page. And I think you're right, Dave. Maybe if he waits just a fraction of a second longer, he throws the ball outside instead of inside.
The number of penalties on number 7 is you set the line at 7.5. The number was 7, so the under had that one.
Yeah, come on. There's some pretty good lines here. Come on.
There are some good lines there. I'll give you that. The tiebreaker was the longest punt.
It wasn't that shank, I can tell you that much. That 29-yard was just ugh.
That's one of those things, like you say. I mean, when something bad happens like that, it's magnified when you're playing poorly.
And
right?
They wound up scoring, I think, after that poor kick.
The long is 51 by Tim Mastey. And what about the highest one? We got a 56 in there. Regardless, we didn't need a tiebreaker. Scott Perk is the winner this week. Are you ready, Chris, for the lines for the Washington game?
Well, I want to make sure I make clear that Scott Perk gets to spend the next week in the luxury of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino right there on the main strip in Durand, Wisconsin. That's right. Durand, Wisconsin is where the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino is. And the maitre d' there happens to be Mike Miller. Did you know that Mike lives in Durand?
Well, I do now.
Yes.
He said that. So is that where is Durand?
It's just 40 miles west of Osseo in west central Wisconsin.
I don't know. Where's Osseo?
Well, you've been to the Norske Nook, right?
Maybe.
Yes. It's got the great sign on the highway on the interstate. It says voted one of America's 10 best. It doesn't say 10 best what, but it was voted one of America's 10 best. I recommend to travelers, and I don't care where you are, if you come to the United States, if you come to the state of Wisconsin, west central Wisconsin, this little town called Osseo, just off of the interstate, they serve the best pie that you are going to find. I mean, this is laden with every kind of lard and fat and everything that tastes fantastic. Norske Nook, west central Wisconsin. And while you're there, you're just 40 miles away from Mike Miller. Check it out.
Okay. We will send a pie up to the casino and hotel this week. And maybe they could sponsor us, too.
I would hope
that
so.
Great promotion.
I would hope so.
I'm sure they're listening.
Yes.
All right. So you ready for the lines for this week?
I am all set to go, Dave.
I am going back to Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating. What do you think his quarterback rating will
be? 80.8 this week, 92.7 on the season. It's been, I believe, 10 games since he's been over 100. And it's hard, given the context, it's hard to believe he's going to be over 100 in this game, playing on the road at FedEx Field. So I'm going to set the rating for Aaron Rodgers at 84.
84. I'm going to take the over. I think he's in line to get his annual average, his this year's average, about 92. I think he'll play a little bit better this week. From a rating perspective, I still don't think they're going to score a lot of points.
Okay.
What do you think Cousins' quarterback rating will be? Because I was looking at his stats this week. His quarterback rating last week was 155.1.
Yeah. I liked him in college. He played in the Big Ten, so I got a chance to see him play. And I like him. I think he's a good quarterback. Is he 155 passer rating good? I don't think so. Packer defense pretty good. So I'm going to put Kirk Cousins' passer rating at 95.
I'm going to take the under on that one. Number 3, how many times, given what their strategy was this week, how many times do you think Eddie Lacy will carry the ball?
He had 13 carries this week. I think he had 7 of them in the first quarter. They went away from the run when it just wasn't getting a lot of traction, pardon the pun there. But I think they're going to be committed to the run again. I think that's kind of what they're trying to accomplish. So I'm going to set his attempts, rushing attempts for Eddie Lacy, I'm going to set that at 16.5.
I'm going to say they go the under. I think there's a chance that they go to schoolyard and say, let's just throw caution to the wind, as Rodgers said in his postgame, that they may rush the ball a bit more.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Or pass a bit more. Number 4, I thought Clay Matthews had a strong game, and boy, you can tell when Clay gets angry.
Oh, yeah.
He has a second gear that he can put it into that he doesn't always use.
I thought he was going to get penalized when he jumped on Bridgewater. He left his feet. I thought, oh, boy,
Yeah. Well, he didn't do helmet to helmet,
true,
but that
true.
Is a violent way to sack somebody,
oh, yeah.
right? I mean, well, how many sacks do you think he'll get this game?
Well, he had been really quiet for a long time. I mean, he had been two games without even so much as a tackle, and he had gone a long time without even getting a sack. But he looked healthier. He looked like he, quote, came to play. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see that again. So let me set the over-under on his sacks at let's set the over-under at one.
Hmm. Interesting call. I'm going to take the – I'm going to push on that one. Can you push? I'll take the over.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
You can have half sacks, and that's why it wouldn't surprise me to see him team up with Julius Peppers. I think, you know, they had him side by side there for a while, and that was highly successful. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more when they overload with Peppers and Matthews on the same side. And so that's why I'm thinking they might share a sack and he gets one by himself.
Yeah, that's all right. So I'm going to take the over on that. All right, so this one may create a little math for Mike, but what do you think the Green Bay turnover ratio will be? So their turnover minus the Washington's turnover, because I think that could decide the game against two bad teams is who has the most turnover.
Mm. Oftentimes it does, too. I think the preliminary forecast is for low to mid-50s and rain in Washington, which, you know, could impact the turnovers. You know, I could actually see it being like 2-2, so like zero, I think is what I'm gonna say.
Zero. I'm gonna take the under on that. I think they're gonna turn the ball over more than the Redskins do.
Okay, so the under means Packers with more turnovers than the Redskins.
Okay. Yeah, so that would be a minus turnover ratio,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
They would have
okay.
Number six, in honor of what I think could be Peppers' last game at Green Bay, how many tackles do you think Julius Peppers will have?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, too. I'm having a hard time believing they're going to bring him back for another season, although I don't think he's been bad this year. I mean, he's made some plays. He's done some things. But, you know, 2 years with a guy that age, it may well be his last game. How many tackles, and this is sacks plus regular tackles?
Yep.
I'm going to set that at three.
Three? I'm going to take the under because that's where I am with Julius. Number seven, who do you think will start at left tackle?
Okay, now is this the tiebreak?
No, this is just so you got to give so no over and under. It's who do you think will start at left tackle?
So how do people win this one then?
You got to guess it correctly.
You got to guess it correctly. So should I guess what, or does it matter what I guess?
I mean, do we know, is Bakhtiari definitely going to start?
No. The latest thing, again, we're recording Monday night, so this could all change. The latest thing that I saw was that Bakhtiari is not committing to whether or not he's going to be available to play.
All right, that's what I thought. So who do you think will start? You got to guess this one right to get this correct.
All right. Or do people just have to match me? I don't know. My guess is that he will play.
All right, so Bakhtiari.
Yes.
I will say the same, but I think there's a chance. I think option two is not going to be Bakhtiari. I think it's going to be – and I don't think it's going to be Sitton either.
I think that experiment, you know, came and went.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Treader. Or couldn't they put Lang out there? He seems more like a more mobile guy.
Lang has played out there in the past. You know,
yeah.
They could also – I don't know if they want to flip Bulaga, given his, you know, injury history, if they want to flip him different side. You know, and move Lang out to, you know, right tackle, and then you know, put what's his name, Lane, in there at guard, the guy that played from, you know, this week.
Well, whatever they do, I don't think
Lane Taylor.
Lane Taylor, right? They're not going to put Sitton at left tackle, I don't think. But if Bakhtiari doesn't play, then it'll be someone new. So I think it's Bakhtiari or somebody else, not named Sitton. And then the tiebreaker is, what do you think the final total score will be? So both the – what do you call that when you add the two scores together? That's the over-under on total score. Add the two scores together. What do you think the final will be? That is the tiebreaker.
That's the tiebreaker, so I'm not even going to guess that one then. But it's a good question because, you know, you have an offensively challenged Packers team. I don't think the Redskins are any great – shakes either when it comes to offense. So that'll be interesting to see how people come out on that one.
And I'm going to say 37. I think Redskins win 24-13.
Okay.
Should add up to 37. That's my guess.
See, you think 24-13. I I'm really tempted here to, you know, give it to the Packers in something close, like a 21-17 kind of Packers win. In fact, just for the heck of it, I'm gonna go down with 21-17 Packers. Was it a total of 38? Even though I'm not playing the betting lines, that's kind of how I think it's gonna come up.
Wait, did you say 20? Oh, 21-17.
21-17 Packers. Yeah.
Right. So you picked
I'm not sure why. It just something just feels like they're gonna be able to eke this one out before getting embarrassed in the desert. Or maybe it's because I want to have another podcast after this week. You know, that might be it too. Anyway, that's the betting lines. If you want to play, we hope you will. We had 14 people that played this past week. The way you play is you send your picks to Mike Miller in Durand, Wisconsin. Mike's email address, you don't have to deliver it in person to Mike. He does take email. It's at mitnomiller@gmail.com, mitnomiller@gmail.com. That's Mike Miller. Send your predictions to him. Play the betting lines with us, and maybe you'll be like our guy, Scott Perk, who wound up in the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino Presidential Suite. Enjoy that this week, Scott. Now, let's take a look at some of the email we got this week. We want to acknowledge our buddy Chuck P. Yeah, he's going to be at the game this week in D.C. Did you see where he's going to be sitting, Dave? He's on the 50-yard line, 10 rows in front of the owner, which is Daniel Snyder, I believe, right, for the Washington football team?
I have not followed Washington so long. I assume that he's still the owner, but, I mean, how little information have you gotten from Washington last few years? We haven't played them. They haven't been good. I mean, I could hardly name anyone on the team, but we'll soon find out.
Yeah, other than Kirk Cousins, yeah, it's really hard for me. I followed Cousins just because I remember him from the Big Ten, but, you know, they are not a team that – they're not a common opponent, I guess is what you would say. But
can you name any Washington Redskin player on defense?
Let me see. No, I can't.
And I think they have – the one wide receiver that used to play for the Eagles.
Right. Deshaun
Jackson. Yeah. Right. Who doesn't Bishop tackle to save the Super Bowl in 2010.
Yes, but, right.
Otherwise, I can't think of – oh, I guess they have a running back that has been fantasy-worthy. But, yeah, I don't know much about the Redskins.
Yeah, and I really don't either. But I do know that our guy Chuck P., the Apple Man, going to be on the 50-yard line. Well done, Chuck. Enjoy the game. We will look forward to seeing photos from your experience there. Our guy, John, one of our old-time listeners, John Sturrock checked in from the UK. He tells us, if you're still in it, you can win it. So there's some optimism from John in the UK. We appreciate that. And then Richard in touch with us. He says that it seems like Rodgers is still waiting for a must-win game to turn it on. Well, you know, Richard, if you're right about that, this would definitely be a must-win game because at this point you lose, you're done. So we'll see if the Packers can turn it on. I think there might have been a little tongue-in-cheek and maybe a little sarcasm from Richard on that one. So we'll see. But thank you, Richard, for checking in. He's a regular correspondent of ours. On Twitter. Brian K. also in touch with us on Twitter, which, by the way, is the best way to correspond with Packers Therapy. He hit us at Packers Therapy, saying the Packers need a big-time tight end. Doesn't need to be Gronk, but even a guy like Reed, a big target who sucks up linebackers from coverage. That's not a bad idea. Brian, I think that makes some good sense. Thank you for checking in with us. And also, we got a retweet, and this is from a guy, Ryan Topp. Ryan, I don't even know if he listens to the podcast that much. He does his own podcast about the Milwaukee Brewers. He used to write and run the Disciples of Euchre website. But he retweeted something from Brett Johnson 9, and what he said is, the Packer fans are the equivalent of St. Louis Cardinal baseball fans. They claim to be ultra loyal, but as soon as shit goes wrong, fire everyone, trade everyone. that was retweeted by Ryan Topp. I think I favorited that one because, you know, I think it's pretty much true. I mean, the Packer fans do have a lot in common with the St. Louis baseball team, the Cardinals. They've been successful forever. They're still successful. They've won, after the Yankees, they've won the most World Series of any team, a long history, and they have fans that are legendary. And so in lots of ways, they're similar to the Packers and Packer fans. And I don't know, you know, it's there may be something to this claim to be ultra-loyal, but as soon as it goes bad, you fire everybody, you want everyone traded. Well, if you listen to the post-game shows, and I know you do, Dave, you know, there are a lot of Packer fans that they have very low tolerance for things going wrong. Let's just put it that way. You know?
Well, we have a expectation of winning. Like it's like our right to win because either you know we win a lot and we're sort of we're Green Bay. We're the owned by the fans, feel good Lambeau Field story that it almost feels like you know we should be winning the Lombardi Trophy, not anybody else. So I think there's an entitlement that we have that certainly Cardinal fans have too. But they're passionate fans, right? I don't know what it's like in other cities where if you lose, no one cares. I mean, because that just doesn't happen as a Packer fan.
Yeah, well, that will be something if you want to chime in on that. You can correspond with us at Packers Therapy. We would love to hear from you, like we heard from Logan Robertson this week. Thank you, Logan, for checking in with us. Also, Ryan Boyd, who I believe may have been one of our past winners enjoying the luxury and comfort of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino Presidential Suite. Ryan, thank you for being in touch with us also on Twitter this week. So that is our, not really a mailbag, it's our Twitter bag. I don't know what you want to call it, from our correspondence from people this week. Thank you for being in touch. We're glad you like the show. So, Dave, we're down to popular culture. And I think you and I have the same one this week. So why don't you start out and tell us about pop culture.
Well, this is the only show I think that everyone's talking about, and it kind of started with slow momentum. I know it popped up on the front page of my Netflix. I remember seeing it, but it's a documentary, and I don't usually just gravitate to those right away, but it was on the front page. And then slowly, little by little, I saw it on Twitter. I hear it on podcasts. I hear my coworkers. I mean, we're all watching the show, it seems like, and if you're not watching it, you need to, and there's two angles to it. One, it's wildly entertaining, and two, it's based out of Wisconsin.
Exactly.
It's a documentary called Making a Murderer, right?
Correct.
Making a Murderer.
Making a Murderer. Yes. Hard
which
to
is,
say.
It is an interesting, and you pointed out too. I didn't realize this, but it's a documentary without a narrator.
Yep.
And you think that's one of the things that makes it so good? It is just news clippings and interviews. And strung together to tell this really amazing story. And I haven't gone through the whole thing yet. I just finished episode 3 right before the podcast. You said you watched 4.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, what, 10?
Mm-hmm.
An amazing story about this guy who was, I guess I don't want to give too much away, but I mean, so turn off the podcast if you want to be completely surprised. But this is given to you in the first episode, is he is wrongly accused of a crime that he did not commit. It wasn't a murder. It was basically a sexual assault. It was an attack,
right.
An assault. And it was kind of proven that he was wrongly accused. And then as he's made a huge problem for the Manitowoc County Police Department, he is then found to be suspect in a murder investigation that happens to him again. And the whole thing kind of blows up is that it appears, at least at this point, that the police is somehow involved in evidence tampering, that they had a lot to lose with this guy because he was found to be innocent and he made them look bad the first time around. There are so many twists and turns with this story right now. I'm only on episode 3, and if it was a movie, I don't think I'd believe it. But being real life, it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm loving it. Everyone I know that's watched so the whole thing, I think, has said it's great all the way to the end, and they can't kind of get the story out of their mind. So it is a must-watch, similar to The Jinx that we had talked about before
right.
and how good that
yep.
was. I think this has potential to be even better because it's longer. It feels more real to me because it happens in Wisconsin. So it's just fascinating for me to watch the setting of where this is happening. I've been to those places. You know, I grew up not too far away and lived in Madison, where a lot of this takes place. So it's really fascinating. And as Packer fans, we were saying you should watch it to get a glimpse of kind of what Wisconsin and other Packer fans, a lot of them are really like. So what do you think of the show? I know you like it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I do. My wife and I have watched 4 installments, and it is gripping. And I think, you know, partially because, you know, being a Wisconsin guy, I grew up in central Wisconsin, which is probably about 90 miles or so to the west of where this story takes place, and it is sordid, and it is seedy and unseemly. But, you know, Packer fans, you know, I know we have a lot of listeners from around the world, in Australia and Europe, and we even learned South America, Asia. I think you have to understand kind of what Wisconsin's about. I mean, there are 3 different Wisconsins. There's Madison and its immediate environs, which is very white-collar, very highly educated. It's a very comfortable place to live. Dave and I both lived there for a very long time. Then there's Milwaukee, where Dave and I have also both lived. I grew up there for 9 years. Dave worked there as a professional, so we know that part of the state, which is the large urban area of the state. And then there's the rest of the state of Wisconsin. And the people you see on this Netflix original, Making a Murderer, they have to have, sometimes when people talk, they have to have the printout of what they're saying below the screen, you know, subtitled, because there's, you know, heavy accents, the grammar isn't great, it is not the King's English, but there's a lot of Wisconsin, a very big portion of Wisconsin, where people look and sound exactly like that, and they live lives and lead lives that are very much like that. And even among the law enforcement group, even some of the attorneys, you know, professional people, there's not the same kind of gloss outside of Madison and Milwaukee that is prevalent in a lot of these small town either lawyers or law enforcement or just the common people. So if you are a Packer fan, and I'm sure that's why you're listening to this podcast, I recommend watching it, if nothing else, to get a sense of what really the real Wisconsin is like. This takes place about a half hour to the southeast of Green Bay. So this is right in Packer country. This is, you know, right there. In fact, there's a part of the show where people are going to Green Bay to, you know, shop at the Shopko and stop at Burger King, in Green Bay. So they're making a big run into town. In fact, I think the guy in question does a stint at the Green Bay Correctional Institute.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right.
You know, so it is close by, and people should get a flavor and a feel. It's a good sense of what Wisconsin is really like and what it's about. And people have commented, Dave, about our accents, which, you know, we probably don't hear. But I hear people sometimes write to us and say, "Oh, it's so great to hear those Wisconsin accents." Ours are nothing like what you will see during Making a Murderer on Netflix. But if you like the Serial podcast, if you like the Jinx, this is something definitely to watch. It's engrossing. It's a cultural experience. I recommend checking it out.
Yeah, it kind of talks a little bit about why Packer fans are so avid, too. It's a little bit related, because if you think of the state compared to a lot of other states, it is a cold weather state. I mean, it's
a lot of snow in the show.
And it's a lot of during takes place in the winter. So this is not there's parts of Wisconsin in the summer that look absolutely beautiful.
Right.
I have not seen beautiful shots of Wisconsin so far in the third episode. It's not densely populated, so there are a lot of families that live on farms that are very, not connected, or they're long drives from each other. And I think there is a lot of overeating. There's a lot of drinking. People don't drink wine there. They drink beer. And, there's just generally not a lot going on in certain parts of the state. So when the Packers are playing on Sunday, that is what's going on. And I think that's where people become so avid, because that becomes – a huge part of your life. You don't watch the Packer game and then let's go out to dinner or the beach or, you know, do something else that's in my life. I mean, a lot of times Sunday is you go to church, you watch the Packers, and then you watch either are happy or depressed for the next few days because that's what's going on in your life. And you can see it with this. They don't talk about the Packers. You see some people wearing Packers stuff pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So it becomes a bigger deal than, say, someone in L.A. who looks like they're going to end up getting a football team possibly from St. Louis. Or even in St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis, there's a lot going on. You know, you do other things. And, you know, Ram fans, even Cardinal fans here, I think there's – the Cardinals don't capture as much of your – identity as what Packer fans do in Wisconsin. And I think part of it is the simple way of life, simple type of people that dominate it, and that is a big part of life. So I think it's an interesting watch for its own, just the story, but it also tells a little bit of what Packer fans are like, you and me included. I mean, I think I grew up in a more populated area in Wisconsin than Manitowoc County. And lived in Madison, like you said, which is a very comfortable place to live. But, you know, I didn't live in a major metropolitan area where there was 1,000 things going on, and so the Packers became a big part of my life because that's what I did on my Sundays. I didn't have 3 things I did on Sunday. It was the Packers. So I think it's a fascinating show. I'd highly, highly recommend it. I think if you like what we do at all, I'm sure you'll like stuff that we both like, and we highly recommend this show.
It's on Netflix. It's a 10-part it's a documentary, but there's a lot of drama involved in it as well. It's a compelling story, Making a Murderer, and you can find it right now, available for streaming on Netflix. So, any loose ends, Dave? Anything that we haven't touched on or covered, or anything else you want to throw up before we wrap this one up?
I think we've touched on everything. We've gone our typical well over an hour, so
right.
I think we hit it all.
Well, I think that's what Alan CD expect from us now. So anyway, that's gonna wrap this episode number 271, wow, of Packers Therapy. News was not good from Lambeau Field. Packers go down 20-13, lose the division to the Vikings, but they do survive to play in the postseason. They will play this Sunday, the last game of the weekend, I think, 3:40 Lambeau Field time. They will be playing in Washington against the Washington football team starting at 3:40. We'll be back a week or so from now to tell you about it. And until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.